Howdy-do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Monday, September 16th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, happy Monday, everyone.
Is it? I haven't checked. Okay. We'll have to figure that out later. Also with me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello.
Glad you're with us today. Now, Charlotte, I actually want to start by asking you about an interesting development from what felt like pretty late Friday afternoon, like late enough that maybe we weren't supposed to pay a bunch of attention.
I suspect it was more to do with the markets. What we're talking about is Bob Iger's announcement that he is leaving the Apple board of directors. He apparently made that decision on September the 10th, the day Apple held its Buy Innovation Only event and confirmed pricing and launch date for Apple TV Plus. Mm-hmm. Now, we may have mentioned it before, but Disney, of which Bob Iger is obviously the CEO and chairman, is also launching a streaming service. You may have heard about this.
What?
Yeah, it's a thing. So my understanding, and I think I've included this in previous stories, is that Bob Iger was actually walking out the room when directors' meetings came on to Apple TV+. I don't think he... once both services were known and public, my understanding is he didn't pay part of those Apple conversations, I think. Mm-hmm. But either way, he has now decided the conflict of interest is too much, that it just doesn't work. And after 8 years on the Apple board, he is stepping aside. Mm-hmm. And this is a big deal. Like, Bob Iger is a big, serious player in business, in media, in tech. And, mm-hmm. Look, the statements that went out on Friday night, it was Friday night my time, were, you know, everyone was lovely and being friends. And it was like, it was a conscious uncoupling, I would say. it was Chris Martin and Gwyneth Paltrow would have been proud.
Yes.
But look, it is significant. And I suspect Apple would have quite... They might not have needed Bob Iger, but they would have liked a big, powerful media exec at the moment on their board as this happened. We know, kind of because of the Pixar-Steve Jobs link, mm-hmm. that the relationship between Disney and Apple has always been a close one.
Yes.
So, look, there's a lot to unpack, I would say, but I'm not surprised that it's happened.
I'm sort of two minds about this. First of all, the timing to me is interesting because it wasn't until after Apple, you know, because we knew Apple had a streaming service coming. We've known for months and months. We've been talking about it for months and months. And it's interesting that it wasn't until Apple said, on this day, for this many dollars, you can get TV from Apple. And that was the point when Bob Iger was like, nope, I'm out. To me, that was interesting.
It's interesting, isn't it, that it didn't happen the minute either Apple or Disney said, we have this service.
Right. And that was sort
longer.
Of what I was waiting for was, you know, after the investor event where Disney unveiled a bunch of their streaming aspirations and, you know, you could watch a bunch of it online. And, you know, as they were giving the presentations, I was like, well, what does this mean for Bob Iger? Isn't he on the board at Apple? We know they're doing TV stuff, too. And I kind of wondered about it. But also, I wonder how much of this is also, like, I think this may also be a piece of him sort of phasing out some of the other obligations he has as CEO of Disney. Because he will no longer be the CEO and chairman when his contract expires at the end of 2021. I know it's 2021. I think it's the end of 2021. That when his contract is up, he's done. So I wonder if maybe he's just sort of going through phases of this. I don't know. He is a pretty high-powered media fellow. He was at ABC for many, many years and was the head of ABC when Disney purchased them. And then eventually became the CEO of Disney in 2000 or 2001. Like, he's been the head of the ship for the for a long, long time. He's the one that bought everything. So,
yeah, he has obviously been at the forefront of trying to make it compete in a digital world as well.
Yeah. So, like, he's done a lot for the company. You know, that's under him. They officially brought Pixar into the fold. They bought Marvel. They bought Lucasfilm, 20th Century Fox. The two Asian Disney resorts, Hong Kong Disneyland and mm-hmm. Shanghai Disney, both happened under him. Disney Animation came back in a huge way under him. You know, he's responsible for Frozen, that kind of thing.
Which presumably, I'm not sure if I'm right in saying this, but I would assume that that is something to do with having Pixar officially in-house as well. Just kind of having that level of animation and expertise and that kind of thing.
Yeah, there's not a lot of... This isn't the Disney podcast, but I'm very, very interested in Disney stuff in my free time. So, yeah, I know a lot more about it than maybe a lot of people do. But I do think it's interesting that it took that long for him to phase out. Andrew, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I think it makes sense. Not only the conflict of interest, but also what you said, maybe he's just gearing up to possibly retire.
Mm-hmm.
So I think doing that, you would have to just take one step at a time. Maybe this is just the first move in many moves that will, you know, like you said, lead up to 2021. So, yeah, like Charlotte, I'm not really surprised.
And I think you can also imagine if you're... if you're another executive, investor, board member, whatever, involved in Disney, there's probably a point where you're like, we need the CEO and chairman not to be contributing in any way, either actually or symbolically, with a competing service. I think there's a point where it's clear that he has to cut his losses. He needs to... Like I say, yeah, they need to separate it, and it makes sense. It was very interesting that they were so nice to each other. It was the other point, of course, that they made it clear. I think Apple made it clear in their statement that they said, we have every expectation that our relationship with both Bob and Disney will continue far into the future. Now, we know, for example, that Disney Plus is going to be on the Apple TV.
Oh, yeah.
So there is... It's obviously not the total end of the relationship between Disney and Apple. Apple made that very clear in its statement. But I think it probably removes any possible conflict of interest from Bob Iger as an individual.
Right. And like I said before, my only real question about this was why it took this long for it to happen, because I just sort of assumed it would be a lot earlier than now. Because in when you look at the amount of time between now and November, when both of these services launch, that's not that far on a corporate scale, right? Like, this is sort of breathing down their necks at this point. So that's kind of why I wonder why it took this long. I figured when we got official trailers for shows, I was like, oh, well, that's it for Bob. But no, he just continued. Mm-hmm. He just continued to hang out on the board and occasionally leave the room. So I'm just sort of glad it does. There's not even a whiff of impropriety, as they say anymore, because he won't be anywhere near any of that now. Instead of like, did he really leave the room? You know, like, we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there is any indication of impropriety, but I think what you're saying is interesting. I think it indicates that Apple was probably pretty keen for him to stay around as long as actually possible mm-hmm. and viable. Mm-hmm. I think that looks pretty clear from this. I'm sure that as soon as all this was started to develop, there must have been a conversation between board members, between Kim Cook, whatever, with Bob Iger saying, you know, working out how to deal with this. And so it must mean that Apple was really keen to keep him on board in an official capacity for as long as was possible.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. And I, The thing I'm most curious about specifically when it comes to Bob Iger is if this is it, because I think he's going to be like 70 when his contract expires. So is he done, or is he going to go like maybe be on a board here and there and continue to do something, you know, sort of job related, or is he really just going to kick back and what's that phrase they always use when people leave? He's going to depart the company to spend more time with his money. Something like that.
Here's one. How about he leaves Disney in 2021 and rejoins the board of Apple?
That might be good. Just pick up where he left off. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about Bob for a minute. Bob Iger is a pretty busy guy. He's got a lot of stuff to do. He's probably tracking that stuff in something like OmniFocus. OmniFocus from Omni Group is a professional to-do list manager that helps you, as the tagline says, accomplish more every day. And OmniFocus will remember everything for you. It comes with a macOS app, an iOS app, which is universal, and an Apple Watch complication. From that Apple Watch complication, you can view, add, and complete tasks right there on your arm. If you are a GTD person, or like me, you aspire to be a GTD person, this is the perfect trusted system. You can enter your tasks from anywhere, including the web, because now if you're one of those people who's stuck with a PC at work, you can use any web browser anywhere, because OmniFocus for web now allows you to access all that information. You can upgrade to the pro version, and with the pro version, you can get even further customization for viewing tasks in perspectives or forecasts. You get AppleScript functionality and lots more. So what you want to do is go get a free 2-week trial from OmniFocus.com, OmniFocus.com. And we'd like to thank OmniFocus for sponsoring the show today. Our second topic is something, Andrew, that you found over at Six Colors, written by Jason Snell. Hi, Jason. And he is talking about the future of iPhone and how it's coming, and we didn't really hear much about it.
Yeah, so you wouldn't know it because Apple didn't say anything about it at the keynote, but these new iPhones, they have this new chip. It's called the Ultra Wideband chip, or U1. Mm-hmm. And Jason thinks, and I agree with him, that it's going to open up this kind of a revolution in how data gets shared between Apple devices. Right now, I think the only use case Apple has mentioned for it is Bluetooth, or I mean not Bluetooth, AirDrop.
Okay.
Which, it could work better than Bluetooth at that. So basically, this chip lets the iPhone know where it is in 3D space. And so the use case that Apple mentions for AirDrop is you could select a person you want on the screen to share something, and then just point your phone at them, and it will be shared that way. And Jason mentions a lot of other different applications like mobile payments, like maybe you could point your phone to Apple Cash, mm-hmm, with someone. Augmented reality. Another rumor was, you know, Apple would release this Apple Tag device, a location tracking thing. So maybe that would work with this chip. So there's a whole lot of potential. And it's just kind of weird that Apple really isn't talking about it yet. But maybe they will if they release this Apple Tag.
Yeah, I remember hearing rumblings. Yeah, I remember hearing rumblings about Apple sort of getting into the NFC tag business, which is like sometimes those little stickers, and you sort of wave your phone near them and stuff happens. It's powered by the same technology that lets you use Apple Pay on a credit card terminal, which is NFC, near field communication. It's the same sort of thing. So you can scan, you can be near a sticker or something. I've seen them for Wi-Fi, like tap your phone here and you'll get logged into the Wi-Fi because it's set up to just send all the Wi-Fi information to your phone. I really want Apple to get into that space. It's one of the things I'm most looking forward to in iOS 13 specifically, because there's going to be a lot of functionality that will become available as part of the software in newer phones where certain things can happen when you you know, tap them against an NFC tag. So you can even use them for like HomeKit automations and stuff. I think Matthew Castanelli is one of the people that's been doing like, you know, I'm going to have an NFC tag, and when I tap my phone on it, it turns off all the lights and, you know, for nighttime, you know, or whatever. And some of that stuff I think is going to be really cool. And I wonder if part of the reason we didn't hear much about it is because right now Apple isn't doing much with it. But let's say it's something that becomes a big deal in iPhone 12. Then they're going to go, and by the way, if you have an 11, you can do this too. Ooh, and it's going to be all amazing because it's going to be some sort of secret feature in the 11s that we never really saw.
You're right, but also it does kind of surprise me because Apple did spend a lot of time at the event talking about the A13 Bionic chip. Mm-hmm. It's not adverse to going into quite kind of into the weeds on this stuff.
Right.
So you would have thought it might want to make more of a fuss about this technology, which sounds fascinating, and I can see a lot of use cases for it.
Well, the reason I think they didn't is because right now it doesn't do anything. So it's not that they are averse to the technology, to telling us way more about technology than most people are really interested in knowing, but because right now, like, they would have spent a bunch of time telling us about this ultra wideband chip, and then like, so now AirDrop will suck a little less. After all that, like, isn't the payoff that you want from it? So I think it might be more like something maybe next fall when we get that event. And I think I've just set a Mac Observer land speed record for speculating about the next phone because we're in that window between pre-order and reception of the current model phone. I think when we get to that point, they'll go, you know, iPhone 11 and iPhone 12 will both be able to do this. Bam, you know, or whatever, and then whatever cool thing it is that the ultra wide band allows the phone to do will also magically be available to everybody who got a phone last year. So I think that makes the most sense because, you know, like you said, Andrew, part of what Jason's piece says is that it's not doing a whole lot right now. Like, it's going to be in the phone, but that is probably why they aren't really talking about it, because this is one of those things where we haven't seen the killer app for it. It would be like if the iPhone 5 had a secure enclave and nobody really talked about it, you know, and then with the 5S, we got Apple Pay, or no, with the 6, I mean, sorry, we got Apple Pay. Like, once we got Apple Pay, secure enclave makes a lot more sense, right? But if they put it in the previous phone, like, what do we care? You know, we can't do anything interesting with it. So I think my theory is that that's what's happening, and as soon as Apple figures out what cool thing to do with it, then it will be something that you can also do on this year's phones, and that will be pretty great. So,
yeah. I mean, now that the hardware is there, it's just a matter of waiting for the software features to come around, and maybe Apple will release some in future versions of iOS 13, or maybe wait until iOS 14. Mm-hmm. We don't know yet.
I wonder if that's maybe a... while we're here speculating, I wonder if that's maybe something for like 13.2 or 0.3, because we know they're already up to 0.1. So maybe we'll get something where something interesting can happen, you know, like better airdropping with file transfers going faster. A friend of mine airdropped me a short little movie. It was like 15 seconds worth of video that he shot on his phone, and he was sending it to my phone, and it took an age. It felt like civilizations rose and fell in the amount of time it took that 15-second video to get from his phone to mine.
But by the way, Andrew just set another land speed record on speculating about iOS 14 before we even got 13.
Yeah,
that's true. I love, you know how I love to break a record. Charlotte, what do you think about this one? As you more anxiously than most await your new iPhone.
Oh yeah, there's a story. Keep an eye out for that one. If I sound annoyed, irritated today, it's because I am.
More than normal, but, she means.
Just wait. there's stories coming. But what do I think? I think, look, my biggest concern with all of this technology, as I've said to you on other occasions, is the drain on battery life. I try and minimize my use of Bluetooth and NFC pay because it sucks the battery life out of phones. If Apple is finding ways to deal with that as well as use this technology, then I'm very excited.
Mm-hmm. I think in this case, the thing that the big question I have about this minute, with the phones that are coming this month, and the software that's coming for them this month, the thing that I'm the most curious about is if this chip is accessible by third-party developers. And if so, like, and they wouldn't know that yet because nobody has an actual hardware version of this device in their hands yet, for the most part. So maybe those are getting out to people now who want to do something cool with this chip. But a lot of times when this sort of technology comes out, that's one of the things that I'm the most interested in seeing, is how everybody else gets to use it. Because everybody's going to look at this very, very differently and bring their own perspective to it and their own killer application of this particular technology. So somebody's going to see, you know, like, I know a really cool thing that my app can do with AirDrop. And like, everybody who has an app that could possibly use AirDrop in some cool way is going to go build that. And then we get a lot of really cool uses of AirDrop, for example. Or, and I would really like to see if this is available to developers. And if you're a developer, we look forward to your letters. I want to find out if this is something that you'll be able to get your hands on once the devices are shipping at scale. Observations at macobserver.com. Please let me know. And because developers can get their hands on it to do something cool with something in particular, that sounds to me like something that would be very, very interesting to use. So I'm looking forward to this because this is one of those moments where it feels like the potential is massive, and now it's just a question of what actually happens with it.
Oh yeah.
So that's my take on it. I'm not just developers, but I'm interested in hearing what the rest of you have to say about some of this stuff. If you have strong opinions about Bob Iger, whatever they may be, if you have a strong opinion about using AirDrop or NFC tags or what this chip could mean for the iPhone 14 with iOS 16, like if we just want to break that record, you know, shatter that record too, let's go for
guys.
It. You can reach us at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can, my favorite method, you can leave comments in the show notes so that you can have discussions with other people about this stuff as well. So I would like to thank both of you for being here today. Charlotte, thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks so much for having me.
I always love getting to talk to you about media and media folks because I always love to get your perspective on that. Also with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Thanks for coming.
It's true. I have a problem. Like a major addiction is fine.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. Andrew, thanks so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.